saw Larry movement, which is an anarchist organisation, which was set up in 1984, which has branches and members across Ireland. We produce a bi-monthly newspaper, Worker Solidarity, which is a free news sheet, 10,000, which is distributed across Ireland, doors, etc. Basically, capitalism can never satisfy the needs of the majority. We know this, most people know this, and certainly the Fisdian workers have unfortunately experienced this at first hand. It was locked into the cycle of boom and slump, such as the current recession. It is based on the division of society into bosses and workers, order givers and order takers. Its unwritten motto is greed is good. The world we live in is capable of feeding, housing, clothing and providing for the leisure and scientific needs of the world's population, yet capitalism means that there can be a shortage of good public housing while building workers are unemployed. It means tax release for the super rich while public services like hospitals and schools suffer spending cuts. Sadly, it means workers such as the Fisdian workers are brutally laid off given 6 minutes' notice. Anarchism is about freedom, freedom from want and freedom to take control of our own lives. It's about production to satisfy human needs and about people having control over the decisions that will affect them. It is about utilising the world's resources in a sustainable manner for the benefit of all. It is about having complete personal freedom where the only limit is that you don't deny the freedom of others. It's socialism and freedom as two sides of the same coin. This is the purpose of WSM. We are building an organisation capable of explaining anarchist ideas. We are developing these ideas while being involved in struggles where we live and work. But it's not simply enough to explain our ideas. Unless people feel they can do something to achieve them, they are meaningless, nice ideas, but totally impractical. Capitalism is ordered in such a way that we have that direct experience of making the big decisions, of exercising control over our own lives. And that gives most people a sense of powerlessness. However, the Fisdian workplace occupation showed that we are far from powerless in resisting the bosses making us pay for their mistakes. Anarchism is not about doing things for people. Its achievement requires a majority prepared to give it a go. A majority which is confident that it can take the driving seat and build a new type of society. To help build this confidence, we see struggles where people use direct action in the pursuit of winnable goals as extremely important. Winning a pay raise through going on strike will do a lot more to boost confidence than trusting any politician or conciliation and arbitration. Beating the water tax through mass non-payment would have a completely different political effect than if it was scrapped next week by the executive. Encouraging, promoting self-activity, self-organisation and direct action is just as important as explaining the ideas. I'd like to welcome Desi Magrum, who Desi speaking in a personal capacity, and he's worked in the plant for 33 years and he's originally from Finnegy. Desi's going to say a few words about the workplace occupation just to give a brief update to people who haven't known much about it and basically about the recent concessions achieved, etc. So I'll hand you over to Dave if you want to say a few words.
Okay, first of all, thank you for inviting me here today. I'll introduce you to Mark O'Brien, who also works in Trump, works in there 30 years. This is my wife, Brian. 6 weeks ago, Mark and I were working on a job that we thought was going to be secure, probably for at least another 3 years, at a stretch 5 years. We were convinced we would have had some more time in the plant. On the 31st of March, the administrators were appointed by Bastion to come into the plant, and we thought administrators coming in, they would at least run the plant in administration for 90 days. That didn't happen. They called the workforce together about 1 o'clock, and we're told we're closing with immediate effect, and that the only thing we were entitled to was statutory redundancy. Statutory redundancy, where people will say it's government money, it's actually the taxpayer who's paying that money. Vestian and Ford tried to walk away from this without paying a single kidney bills. They were getting out completely scot-free. There is a very strong link between Vestian and Ford. When I started the plant, I signed a Ford contract. Mark also signed a Ford contract. We never signed any contract with Vestian. Our contracts were firmly with Ford. Ford Motor Company created the Vestian Corporation in the year 2000, and it was known then as an enterprise of Ford Motor Company. It was wholly owned by Ford Motor Company. I think it was about 2 to 3 years later, it would have been that they said there had been a complaint put into the Monopolies Commission about the running of Vestian, because they still had the Ford logo on the parts, and the idea of Vestian was that they would make parts for any manufacturer. This complaint was made by, I think, Porsche and Mercedes. Now, why they would have complained about the Monopolies Commission about a car maker like Ford, who made cars for the ordinary everyday person, as opposed to these companies making the more high-class cars, it bewildered me a wee bit. So Ford decided then they would spin Visteon off. At the time of the spin-off, if you wanted to buy shares in Visteon, you couldn't do it unless you were a Ford shareholder. So it was spun off to the Ford shareholders, and no one else could get any shares in that company. The product lines that we made, everything that came into the plant had to have Ford approval. That was the machines, the tools that we used, and even the parts that we put on. Ford didn't approve those parts. We couldn't use them. We tried to sell to other companies, and Ford stepped in and said no. So it ended up that Ford Motor Company were the only customer that we had. As a result of that, whenever we sat in the plant, we weren't given an option to reopen the plant, even under Workers Corporation, because our sole customer was gone, and the Ford still owned all the machines and all the tools. As I said, 6 weeks ago, the administrators had been in the plant, and when the announcement was made, a lot of people were walking around totally bewildered. They didn't know what was happening. They were in shock, to say the least. And people just milled around the plant. It was decided, who it was decided by, I don't know, that the plant would be occupied until we got Ford and Visteon to the table to discuss at least some type of package. Unfortunately, we did jump on that right away. There was an example given of one man who had been given a quotation of 70,000 of a lump sum and 38,000 a year of a pension. The media jumped on that straight away, and unfortunately I think some of the people out in the public thought that all we wanted was money. And that was probably wrong of us to project that only to the beginning, because all we really wanted was our jobs. We didn't want the financial package. But when they talked about these packages, they would have put an offer up on the board, on the notice board, inviting to make an application for voluntary redundancy or early retirement. The company still decided who went, who didn't go. So the man who was quoted in the paper when he applied for it at Christmas was not allowed to go. He wasn't given the choice. A lot of people seem to think that we didn't accept their offer at Christmas. That wasn't the case. There was only so many that were going to let go. A lot of people walked around bewildered and stunned. There was one particular set of doors on the plant that would have been the main entrance into the plant now. And I walked past them, and the doors were there closed, and I think someone got to hear that the security, or the additional security they brought in, were going to lock those doors. When I walked past those doors a minute later, they were gone. Someone had forced me to take the doors off, so that prevented them from locking us out. For the first day, I think everybody still just milled around. We were quite prepared to stay there, but didn't really have any plan of what we would or wouldn't do. We had people like Sinn Féin, the Socialist Workers' Party, and various groups came up and gave us talks on what we should do. And I think the best advice we got came from the Fireman's Union. They came up with the advice to open up a bank account for a hardship fund. I can remember at the time thinking, you know, why don't we need a hardship fund? But having spent now 40 days, I think it is, we're going to have to pay the plant. The hardship fund was set up because people out of the Fireman's plant for a start needed to be fed. So the money was taken out of that for the feed people. Our union representatives had to go across the water to England for various things, so at least now the money was there to send representatives over. They also got other people with them as well. So the hardship fund was set up and is still ongoing. When this is all over, the hardship fund will still exist. That money will not be distributed among the people up there. It will be retained to make donations to charity and also to other hardship funds in the future. 6 weeks is a long time staying in a plant. Various things that we did was we picketed Stortland just on Tuesday there. The executive, Northern Ireland executive, debated the situation in the chairman, and I think it's the first time I've ever really witnessed cross-party support for anything in Northern Ireland. I've heard about them talking about cross-party support before, but I was at the meeting and it was full cross-party support. One of the things that has happened, where they've offered a financial package, which members of the public probably think it's a great deal, it's not. When your job's gone, it's not a good deal. myself, we want our pensions. I paid into the pension fund for 33 years, Mark's paid into it for 30 years. And you're probably talking somewhere in the range of 130, 140 pounds per month. That's not an option at the ultimate moment. So we talk about the pension, you know, the pension protection fund. That only guarantees a maximum of 90% of your pension. I'll be 53 in a few weeks. So if I decide when I'm 55 to withdraw that pension, I lose 4% of it every year. So it's 4% of it, 40% of 90% of my pension. That wasn't the reason for being paid into. And the public support we gave was tremendous. It's something that if we hadn't had the massive public support, it would have made it an awful lot more difficult to stay occupying that panel. To give you an example of some of the support we got, there was a man appeared at the Twin Gates one day with two small children and handed over three bags of groceries. I asked him who it was from, he said, it's just from us, we wanted to show some solidarity with him. We also had a pensioner who came to the plant, and she explained that she didn't have very much, but she wanted to show support, and she gave us a ton of beans. Now, some people might laugh to hear that, but that was all this woman could afford. But she wanted to show solidarity to us. There was various other actions taken as well. There's investigations going on into the way the pensions were handled. There's 140 of our managers in the morning transferred their pension 2 years ago to Vestion Engineering Services.
3 months ago?
Some of them was 3 months ago, but it actually started 2 years ago, but some of them, I think the bulk of them was 3 months ago, they transferred their pensions into this Vestion Engineering Services. Also part of the Vistrom Corporation, and their pensions are now protected. They have a better guarantee of their pensions than we could ever hope for. Other advice that we were given was we would reach highs and lows in this campaign. That certainly did happen. Vistrom did come to the table about 3 to 4 weeks ago, and they made a derisory offer to us of 16 weeks wages. It was really what they owed us in any way. They still were getting out with they were paying off, they're paying very, very little. Because my understanding is that whenever they pay you money, the statutory redundancy is then claimed by the company. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but that's what I've been told. But they can still claim that off the government. The highs and lows that I saw in the plant, there was a lot of people, as I say, in shock, probably still are in shock at this. Because we thought we were dealing with honourable people. We thought that we'd always exclude bias. When you've worked for a company for 33 years and you've worked through all the troubles and it hasn't stopped the production lines, it was something we were quite proud of. Through all the years of conflict in Northern Ireland, that we still come into work, we still produce the parts. The parts that we made have now been transferred to China, Philippines and South Africa. Some of our engineers went to South Africa to assist setting up those lines and to assist setting up the production. One guy in particular, I don't have a name, but he was told in January, we didn't put a budget in for you next year, you're not gone. And he had helped set this plant up in South Africa, so I'm sure that was a major impact on that man. He probably thought he was doing what was right, he was told to do things, and we certainly didn't agree on the plant, but we felt he should have done it in the first place, and he probably did get a bit over him, then again over in the plant where he was in South Africa. There were other engineers went to China, assist the setup of the China plant. The plant in the Philippines, about 5 or 6 years ago, they sent an engineer over to Belfast for 6 months, and we showed them how to set up the molding operations. They didn't have the expertise or the experience. The skills base that was in the plant is probably very high level of skills. Those skills are now going to be lost. There's no other employer in Belfast or Northern Ireland who could use our skills or utilize them the way they should have been used. As I said, we thought we were dealing with honourable people, we weren't. While they have made a cash offer at the moment, we intend to stay in the plant until the money is in the bank accounts. A letter did come in this morning to the plant, and part of the criteria that the Vistrom Corporation put on that is that we leave the plant and vacate it before they will pay this money. They said the money sits for the administrators, but we don't trust them. Because that offer can be withdrawn just as easily as it was made. And that was proven by their actions a few weeks ago. To give advice to people on how to cope with this sort of thing, certainly one of the first things I would say would be to listen to the other people. experience I ever thought that I would be involved with. It's not something that, you tell me 6 or 7 weeks ago you're going to be occupying this plant for the next 6 weeks, I'd have laughed at you. I really wouldn't have believed it. I wouldn't have believed it was necessary. And the advice that people gave us between setting up the bank account and one of the other things that we were told was, don't take it for granted that everybody's going to be here every day. You can't take it for granted that Jimmy's a great guy and Jimmy will be there straight when you want to. If this happens to anybody that you know, I would advise them to be there as often as they can. And other terms of support, probably some of the people that don't get thanked too much but should be thanked as our own families. With the support of our own families, it would have been impossible to do this. I'm sure my wife would tell you the type of support that has had to be given. She'll tell you don't do anything in the house in the first place, but now they're even less at the moment. And I'm very grateful for that support. Do you want to say anything?
Well, I come from the stadium, and I know the David's a good word. The manager, you forgot to mention that they brought bodyguards in with them. KPMG hired bodyguards for all their managers. So the managers stood there with their bodyguards on their shoulder. And we took it over. The manager was still there. The security was still there. And KPMG were still there. The managers were all holding up in their offices on the table. For their own safety, if you remember, if they left. And they panicked. Can we leave safely? Away you go. Security were still there. He's not being touched by us. But you'll not be relieved. Any other security men come up to cover here on the next ship, they'll not be getting in. So they stayed for a lot of hours and they asked if they leave and they went. The administrators would life food in for them or anything else. And they asked if they would leave and they went. So we just run the place. We dismantled the cameras, dismantled the kids. We have guys who went from production operators and sparks to master chef in a day, doing all the cooking stuff. But my right, I knew the first day this happened, our biggest problem was going to be our national officials. Because they have more in common with the bosses than they have with any of the union members. And they have a lifestyle more akin to the boss than they have to us. And they don't see themselves as leading the workers. They see themselves as a buffer between the workers and the bosses. We had a guy, Derek Simpson, who's one of the joint men in Unite, who was on Newsnight, fortunately, when they brought the 50% tax in, they were $100,000. And they asked the guy at the CBI what he thought, it's crazy, it's going to be a brain drain. And he turned to Derek Simpson, he said, well, what do you think of this 50% tax in the world underground? Considering you're on £180,000 a year. This is a union guy who stays in £2,000 a night hotel rooms and travels first class. So our biggest problem was getting union, and we had to pay them purely over the first month. But if we hadn't got them on board, we could maybe kept that factory open. And we could have got our pensions. Because they have sold us short as well. Now, I'd have loved to have got a crack at Dover to Bridgehead to stop an engine plant. But it wasn't as easy as when we weren't bidding tickets, because we would all would have went. And we could have stopped that. Providing Tony Woodley and the United leadership, I spoke to the conveners in the plant and arranged for the pickets to go. Because we had turned it up, but they would have crossed us. They would have crossed the picket line. And we looked bad on TV and would have been really big. But as soon as they looked as if we were getting close to going to Bridge End, they threw this offer on the table, which suited the majority, suited the younger guys who were in their 30s, who were no chance of getting a pension, who were happy enough getting a lump sum of maybe 2 years, that they can go out and trying to get another job. So I think the union officials have sold the short here too. They could have got a lot more of it.
One of the things that they also did, they made constant attacks on our paying conditions. Whenever Ford officially spun this down off, we were given a lifetime guarantee of our paying conditions. We were known as MERV for employees, which meant that every raise that Ford got, we got. Pension rates, sickness benefits, everything was to be the same, stay the same. And as Mark says about union officials, on one occasion they actually did send the union officials over to our plant to try to talk us out of our paying conditions. We resisted that. Some of the English plants may have given in, but it was the Belfast shop stewards and convener who forced it through that we wouldn't give those up. And over the years they tried to bring in temporary workers and we resisted them bringing in temporary workers. And some people may think that that's a bit unfair, that you're stopping people from getting a job, but our idea was that why give out temporary jobs when you can give out full-time jobs? Because we felt it was very unfair to bring people in as temporary workers when a body was hired, and once it took it that they were gone, and that did actually happen. We did give in the end and allow temporary workers, but that was also at another cost, which was what is known as the CCR rate, or cost competitive rate. They talked us into accepting CCRs, and when we had meetings about that, my personal opinion at the time, and I don't know whether I was naive about it or not, but I felt from those discussions that the difference in the pay rate would be a maximum of 10-15%, which actually as much as 40%, which meant the man could stand beside me doing the same job getting 40% less wages. But at least that was full-time employment. Even in, with the agreement, the payoff agreement now, they still differentiate between former people and the CCRs. We're being given a payment of, I think it's a week for every year before the 41, a week and a half for every year after that, plus 52 weeks wages, and then all your holiday pay. The CCRs were offered a week's wages for 41, a week and a half after 41, plus 26 weeks wages. So they still forced through a difference, which I feel is very unfair. These people have stood beside us shoulder to shoulder in this whole campaign, and they're still being treated differently. Let's say it's not something that we ever thought we would have experienced. Some of our managers a few years ago tried to force people out to take money and to take packages, and it was going to be closed within a year. That wasn't the case at the time. We don't trust any of the managers that were employed there. Since this campaign has started, one of them in particular, the HR manager, has tried to make friends. They phoned some of the union officials in Belfast last week, said that they wanted to make friends with him. We still don't trust him. We don't think he ever was our friend. We don't think he ever will be.
Can I bring in Davey there, and then we'll open up the floor and more contributions?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that by listening to us, I think what you said is that we truly inspire client buyers listening to the account, and it's also important, I think, that lessons of struggles should be taken forward into the wider community and the wider society. Now, I want to speak with some of the issues in regard to myself and the lessons I've learned in the course of various struggles over the years, especially the last 10 years or so. Many of the campaigns and movements that I've been involved in have taught me many, many different lessons. And basically, most of them started with 6 or 7 people in the room. The ones that we'll talk about briefly is the, where I was a spokesperson or an organizer, chair within them. It was the Nipsit strikes, the anti-war movement, the anti-racism movement, the globalization movement, and street scene, which was for homeless and houseless people. Now, when I started off in the politics, and one of the things you said earlier on there, is that you don't actually realize until something happens to you that you want to get involved in things. And I remember, you know, my first type of agitation where I was with a young guy who had actually called me his name a few months beforehand. And I remember when the strike started when I was in Nipsit, where we walked out in an official election and stuff. And because of what was happening, because of the low pay, because of what management was doing to us at the same time, his problem wasn't with me, the problem was with the management. So I started finding that it doesn't matter what part of the community you come from, that whenever you're actually in the course of struggle, then you actually start to find a voice and you start to find an understanding of your politics as well. A lot of lessons through the different campaigns and learned, and again, you said the trade union bureaucracy and stuff as well. I found that a lot of different, maybe trade union bureaucracy or maybe political parties, they all have their interests and they will get involved if they're moved, they get involved. In a lot of different campaigns, you've seen different political parties, the trade unions, come on the board, and they only came on board because there was a struggle from below that brought in the masses of working class people, and because of that, they were moved to take action. But one of the problems I found that was, in the long term, it was detrimental to the campaign and the movement, because what they wanted to do was solidify and their own interest within it, and de-escalate the actual militancy within the struggle. And I found that a very, very important lesson to learn. And again, when you're talking about colleagues and family. I think it's very important. People do lose out the fact that, you know, without that background and family support and stuff, a lot of people in non-political parties do get kudos from what actually is happening, and they're saying we support the workers in this, that and the other. But it's actually the people on the ground, your families, your friends, your colleagues, your comrades, whatever, who's actually the bedrock to that actual support. So as I progressed with the Meal Understand, and as I say, I've involved in different campaigns and movements, I started to realise that the ruling classes, and that is the political elite, the trade union bureaucracy, do have their own self-interest, and they will try and, you know, to say, to de-escalate everything in a certain direction. So I think it's important we do open up discussion here and talk about exactly the lessons from the vision and occupation and the lessons of the last 10 years or so of what the people have been involved in.
Does anyone want any suggestions or comments? Anyone contribute on anything? The floor? Do you want to come back in? Does anyone have it?
Well, the trade union movement has given Gordon, right 14 minutes since he came to leadership of the party. But I give you, you know, it should be withdrawn unless they repeal all these anti-trade union laws, which Margaret Thatcher brought them. And they're not going to do it. Actually, Gordon Brown's actually got an advisor to the trade union movement to make sure they told the party then. So,
I think one of the interesting things about this going on, that also happened recently with Toshiba in England. Toshiba closed down a plant and they moved their production to Poland. And people talk about these jobs being lost. Well, they certainly are lost to us. These jobs have just simply been moved to another country where it's cheaper to produce. The workers in South Africa, I personally don't bear any animosity towards those workers. Like ourselves, are looking for employment. Most of these workers have been taken out of the shanty towns in South Africa, and they're not paying them enough wages not to be able to move out of the shanty towns. And that's one of the horrendous things about this. They have moved to a lower wage country, and these workers really don't have any hope. It's just a job that went 9 to 5 go home, and they're not able to improve the next day. The other interesting thing about it as well, whenever Ford worked along with Vistion, and it is documented, they did work together to de-source Belfast. The parts in South Africa, the fuel oil, they're now paying them $10 a part more than they were prepared to pay us. They would never allow us to get into profit. There was an occasion a couple of years ago where we did actually go into profit one month, so Ford lowered the price of our part that they were prepared to pay for it, and backdated that by 6 months, which meant that we reduced the parts for even less. It was what they referred to as chain of price. They were prepared to pay us the cost of the part, similar to what it would cost in China, regardless of what it cost us to produce it. So it ended up we were actually producing parts, and it was costing us money to do it, while the Ford paid less and less for it. So every time we neared a profit, and they did ask us to make some cost-cutting savings over the years. They wanted us to exit the die-cast operation. Our die-cast operation in Belfast was a very successful, very technical operation. I can remember about 13 or 14 years ago, a group of Americans came over from the Rawsonville plant in the States, and they were amazed at the technology that we had. We were the most technologically advanced die-cast operation in Europe at the time, to the extent that they sent out straight away for videos so they could video our whole operation, because they had never seen anything as good at it. So we did help out Ford with a lot of things. They asked us to exit the die cast, and they said we would get replacement work. The die cast operations in total, between die cast and the parts, deburring them and machining them, probably would have had between 100 and 125 people involved in it. They give us plastic manifolds as the replacement work, and the maximum head count for it was 75. So there was a shortfall there of 25 to 50 jobs. In my opinion, replacement work should also be replacement headcount. They weren't prepared to do that. But this is the nature of what capitalism is. It's been 1964, 1965, on the Ford one year times. Mm-hmm. Brad Faulkner was minister here, and he brought a lot of factories in around all at the same time. A Ford, Michelin, Goodyear, Carreras, Engelon, ICI, they all opened up, and they all got 20-year leases. And they get rent-free, rent-free, whatever perks they got.